Hello and welcome to the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And we're back for Giro d'Italia 2015, show number two. If you are a listener to our show, you know we did a show number one already just before the race started as an overarching pre-race show, because that's what we do here. We make pre-race shows. And this is still, in a way, a pre-race show because we're going to talk a whole lot about what's coming up next in the Giro. We've got nine stages out of the way so far. Things have changed dramatically in some ways in, you know, from what we expected going in and the current situation. And in other ways, things maybe haven't changed so much. So we're going to take stock of what's happened so far. We're going to just kind of step back and try to piece together what the important things are that have occurred in these past nine stages. And then we're going to look ahead at the next six stages, the next six stages being the 6 days of racing that will occur before rest day number two.
Yeah. And as they say, past is prologue. We can't do the pre-show without kind of doing the post-show, at least not in a grand tour.
Absolutely. There's too much knowledge that we have gleaned from these first 9 days to not use it. And then we'll do a third and final Giro show for that second rest day, where we will take all of the knowledge that we will have learned by that point and apply it to the explosive final week of racing. So, to kind of get into the whole looking back so that we can look forward business, if you listen to our last show, you'll know, I think we ended our last show talking about just how excited we were for the start of the Giro d'Italia. And I think you could tell looking at the crowds on stage one, there was a lot of excitement in the air. Everybody's been really looking forward to this race. I think Alberto Contador's presence here has really helped that. Richie Porte's good form in the early season has really helped that, because it looks like he's finally ready to maybe take that big step. So there's a lot of excitement in the air coming into this race. We were really happy to start the first couple of stages. And we actually spoke to a person who was there right at the start. He was there for the run-up to the race, and then he stuck around for a few days after. Dave Everett, you may know him from his amazing shoddy cycling videos. He was right there at the start of the Giro d'Italia, so he's going to tell us exactly what it was like down there on the ground, first-hand experience, to maybe just give us a better idea of what the first few days of the Giro d'Italia feel like in person. Dave Everett, thank you for joining the Recon Ride.
No, thank you for having us.
For our listeners, Dave has been at the Giro d'Italia. He's at the run-up to the Giro, and he's been at the first couple of stages. So, Dave, can you just tell us what you've been doing over there, how long you were there, why you were there?
Yeah, I got a few days in, day before, and then two stages. I was over there working for Cycling Tips and also doing a fair bit for another Belgian brand, Morgan Blue Oils. Visiting teams, visiting mechanics, seeing what's going down, and then catching a bit of race itself. It's certainly a spectacle that the Italians know how to put on.
You've been to, obviously, a lot of different races. I mean, we just saw each other in the classics. What makes the Giro such a spectacle? Why is it different? What's so unique about it?
It's just it's got that passion, like screaming right at you straight away. You get there, it's so much more laid back than the Tour. I thought I'd already applied for my accreditation. Obviously, my email hadn't got to them, so I turned up and they were like, you're not in the system. If this was the Tour, they'd turn you away. That'd be your 3 weeks over, game over. But you turn up there, RCS were like, yeah, no worries. What's your name? What publication you working for? I could have been anybody. 5 minutes and you got accreditation. You got that badge around your neck.
That's a bit of a change from the historically strict ASO.
Oh, it's a world difference. Like, they'll allow you to do videos in the pits. The Tour, I don't know if people know this, but it's something like €12,000 to do video in the pits, like in the start area. It's crazy money.
The ASO thinks they own every picture and every video taken at the Tour de France within like 300 miles of the race course.
Cosmo, do you feel strongly about video rights in the cycling industry, or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even like information should be free, man. I'm like information should be reasonably licensed and distributed so that, you know, everybody benefits instead of, you know, so the Tour terrifies everyone into following their ridiculous rules because, you know, the Tour is the only thing that matters. So.
What does that mean for you, Dave, when you can actually go in there and like do your job? I mean, is that obviously I would imagine it makes you feel a little better about going in there, but is it, are you able to do more things, obviously?
Hell yeah. Let's just say ever since I've only been with Cycling Tips 2 years now. Prior to that, I started off doing the videos myself. I didn't have accreditation. I was just a fan that was willing to jump the barriers and willing to get caught. I'd blag passes, and then I could get interviews because I didn't have fear of losing my accreditation. But with the RSC, it's you can get stuff no problem. Is that, like I say, you've got the fear of ASO of getting caught if you haven't got accreditation. Even if you have got accreditation and it's not the correct accreditation, they'll take it off you if you're getting video or something where you shouldn't be. Just opens so many doors. You're able to chat to who you like, get what you like to a certain degree. It makes life so much easier.
Do you think this very like laid back atmosphere of the Giro kind of has a flip side of total chaos and disorder? Because I don't think there's been a Giro I can remember where there hasn't been some crazy polemica, as they say, over fan interference or weather, or just it feels like no one's in charge.
This is only sort of my second Giro. It's hard to say, but I know where you're coming from with that. There's definitely that bit more haphazardness about the whole place. But I think it adds character to it. It adds that old school charm that the Tour's definitely lost, I feel. It's too clinical, the Tour. The Giro's just got that, yeah, there's that underlying fun, passionate aspect to it that just... It just makes it so much more fun to be part of.
Did you go to any post-stage or, I guess, post-presentation parties? And can you tell us, you know, what that scene is like? Because that's really the important part.
The parties? No, I've ended up in plenty of Italian bars, drinking the old spritz or stuff like that, getting that down, yeah. But it's just, even before the race, it seems a party environment. One morning, got up at the hotel, thought I wouldn't see anybody, went out for a morning run, got bed hair, and you're bumping into the guys that own Orica Green Edge and DS, Matt White, out for a jog. And it's just, yeah, that's so much more laid back, and you know that wouldn't happen at the Tour because there's that many stresses on them, they wouldn't be leaving the hotel room.
Well, so did you talk to a lot of riders before or during the race, just like interviews, that kind of thing, to get any sort of... you know, roadside insight that you might be able to share with us on anyone in particular?
I spoke to Heinrich Hausler just about the race, caught up with him a little bit. And then, but I've mainly...
How many F-bombs did you count?
Oh, he is superb for dropping the F-bomb. any swear word for that, yeah. He's loving it because it's his first Giro, believe it or not. Oh, that's what he told me at least. And he says it's himself. It's a completely different atmosphere. The hotels might not be brilliant, but the food's good. So that makes a world of difference.
Yeah. Did he have a sense of? Because I know that they have him. They've got Sylvain Chavanel. They've got Paluki, who was just second the other day. And I'm thinking they got a lot of really good guys who are just kind of waiting for them to get a stage win. Did he mention anything in particular about kind of their approach there? I don't know, any days that he had in mind? Because I feel like he's the kind of guy that I've asked him before, and he'll come out and say, I'm looking at this stage and this stage, you know.
If I'm honest, the conversation I got with him was more about his new family.
Oh yeah, he just became a dad, right?
Yeah, I'm working on a piece with him about that. He's got two sons, twins, so it's, I spoke to him more about how life has changed and how he views cycling now as a new father compared to how he did when he was just had himself to look after. So I didn't really get much out about the Giro out of him, really. just that he's liking it a lot more than the tour.
See, Dave, that's why I wanted to have you on, because like Cosmo and I can go on and on and on about guys who we think are going to win stages, pretty much the same thing we do every week. But then you have these like heartwarming family stories that are, you know, more important, I think. So that's really the heart of this.
Well, I'm taking Hausler off. I'm taking Hausler off my list of guys who are going to win downhill finishes now. He's not taking risks with a new baby. Is he riding with the pacifier, the dummy in his back pocket, like Saucer used to do?
Not that I've noticed. Not that I noticed. He might have a bib stuck in there. You never know.
So can you tell, you were telling us before we had this conversation, you know, recorded, but can you just tell the listeners how many miles or I guess in kilometers you've been driving the last couple of days?
Oh, it's been crazy. I started up near Scotland, had to drive down to Belgium, then down to San Remo, back to Belgium, and then I'm now back in the south of France over the other side. It's been about 4,500 kilometres. So, far too many for an old car that I'm driving.
All right, well, I know that you have an important dinner plan ahead, and you've also driven, as you said, over 4,000 kilometers, so we'll let you go, and we appreciate your joining us and sharing the Giro stories, and we'll keep an eye out for you. Hopefully, we'll see you soon at the races.
Definitely. Thank you for having us again. Hope to catch up soon.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, Dave, we'll talk to you.
Spot on.
Again, that was Dave Everett. He's on Twitter, @ShoddyCycling. Definitely give him a follow. Very funny guy, and pretty cool, I think, to get his perspective on the situation, kind of as we were talking about there. He actually can bring you a little bit more of the human perspective rather than just having Cosmo and I go on and on about who we think's going to win what stage or not. So anyway, we're now 9 stages into the race. The GC picture has started to shape up a little bit. There have been a number of stage hunter friendly days so far, actually. You know, we had Orica GreenEdge winning that team time trial in the very beginning, which I don't think was all that unexpected, and there weren't really huge time gaps there. And then there were some sprinting stages and a couple of breakaway stages. That stage 5 was maybe a little bit less thrilling than it could have been, but at the same time, there was some action on that climb. I think the biggest news so far is, of course, the Alberto Contador shoulder dislocation, which may or may not have an impact on his race, because he came right back from that and he has seemed to be doing okay since then. And the way things stand now, he has taken the GC lead. He's wearing pink. He has just a 3-second gap over Fabio Aru as of today, with Richie Porte a little bit behind, not very far behind, and then Rigoberto Urán a little further behind, because Urán has not been having a great first week. But, you know, I think these are the guys that pretty much everybody thought were going to be up there. So it's not a huge surprise. And they're all, well, at least Aru, Contador, and Porte are on a pretty level playing field right now. They seem to be pretty close in terms of form. And from what we've seen on the climbs, no one of them has been able to really distance the other two just yet. I mean, that has only been on 2 really hard climbing stages, but things seem to be pretty close right now. The team support for these guys, though, maybe a bit of a different situation.
Yeah, it's surprising. It's really been surprising early in the race, before even the climbs, to see Tinkoff Saxo doing a ton of work leading people out. But it's been Astana that's been just, I don't want to throw any implications in here that don't need to be in here, but they've been much stronger than we've seen them so far this season. They've looked disorganized. And, you know, this is just, you've got 4 Astana guys bringing the peloton down to 25 riders. And then when the heads of state do get clear, you've got Urán nowhere in the picture. And then you've got, you know, suddenly the 3 Astanas hanging on this group of, you know, 6. So it's definitely, I don't want to say it's an Astana we haven't seen before, but definitely a different Astana from the rest of this season.
Yeah, and Aru in particular, we just weren't sure where he was going to be. Suddenly he's more than okay. He's doing great. He's clearly healthy enough to race at a very high level. And the riders around him, yeah, we didn't really see a whole lot of action from these guys. I think Mikko Landa showed up pretty well at the Giro del Trentino, but Cataldo, for instance, has looked really strong so far. And And that's going to be a big help to Stana. Whereas Tinkoff Saxo, you're right, they've been doing a whole lot of work early on and on the flat sections of the stages, and they've been setting the pace so far. But then once the road goes up, it's like they're all too beaten up by all the work that they've put in all day to really do a whole lot. And that hasn't looked good for them so far, although I'm not sure it's really made a huge difference just yet. But I don't think they're going to be too happy about the way things have gone so far in that department, and they'll probably be looking for ways to fix that in the next couple of days.
For sure. And I think another team kind of looking around will be Sky. Just because it's so weird for me. We cycling fans have become so accustomed to seeing Sky do almost what Astana is doing here that it's almost, you know, I kind of feel for Richie Porte. Like, he's really kind of having to sound out the race on his own, and he's doing a really good job. My question is some more support going to materialize as the race goes on? Because the pace has been very high so far. Just overall, that's what I've heard from riders. I don't have any numbers off the top of my head. Shouldn't say that's what I've heard from riders. That's what I've read riders say in interviews. And I'm wondering if things won't finally relax a little bit once some more space starts to appear around the GC, and we'll get to see Sky kind of doing what they historically have done best and dictate the race on the toughest days.
Yeah, and Astana, the super strong team here, Tinkoff Saxo and Sky, both not really sure exactly where they stand, but I think it's pretty clear the big loser in terms of team support is Rigoberto Urán and his EdX Quickstep squad that has just been nowhere to be seen in the tougher parts of the stages that we've watched so far. He's lost Johnny Miersman and Peter Seri to abandonment at this point. And if you are a rider who is not feeling great, and apparently Urán has been suffering from a bit of bronchitis, and he was really always going to be a bit, I would think, a bit behind Contador, etc., on these deeper climbs, you really need a strong team. Urán is the exact type of rider that benefits the most from a strong team closing down the gaps that the aggressive climbers are creating. I mean, he's the guy who's able to hang on to a strong team on those tough climbs, let his support riders help keep things together, and then take time in the time trial. This is what we saw with Bradley Wiggins in the 2012 Tour de France. If you have a strong team and you're a good time trialist, you can just keep the race on lockdown. Well, Urán's not been able to do anything of the sort. His team's been gone missing, and he's obviously not feeling well, and that's a very bad combination. So he's dropped back in the general classification. At this point, Fabio Aru's teammate Mikel Landa might even be a stronger GC candidate, or at least on a level playing field with Urán, just the way he's been riding. I would think that Urán's going to get a little bit stronger as the race goes on, but it hasn't looked good for him yet. And then you've got kind of the stage hunter picture, which has been a lot more than just the sprinting picture, because there's really only been two sprinters' days so far. And even those have been kind of interesting. What did you think about what we saw in those two sprinters' days?
The sprints have been very physical. Well, Greipel got a good lead out on stage six from a personal standpoint. Like, the whole rest of the field was really in this gigantic scrum for his wheel. And we all saw the, you know, Coley breaking his arm in a dramatic fashion. But that was really a factor of people just being spread out and almost relaxed behind him. Like, he was diving into a gap along the barriers that just almost a no-hope gap, but still, when it's not fast and it's not hard and you feel like you've got the legs, you start taking these silly risks. So, you know, great viewing for us, but maybe not the best feeling for the sprinters in the peloton.
You know, it's not just been the sprints that have been messy. There's just, everything's been messy so far. There's been a lot of messiness in this race. We've seen really bad crashes. Obviously, the pivotal one so far was the one that bent Daniele Colli's arm 180 degrees in the wrong direction, and that dislocated Alberto Contador's shoulder. That was a big, big deal. I think it had the potential to totally change up this race, although Contador's performance so far has suggested that maybe it won't. There's been rain. There's been a lot of rain, actually. There was that descent on stage nine there where we saw red flags come out.
Was that a neutralization?
Yeah, exactly.
Or was
we've
it
seen
not,
red
or...
flags before. This is a race that has neutralized a descent in bad weather with red flags before, but I don't, was there any official word on that?
Before the race, they were talking about how they'd set up a bad weather protocol. Some sort of protocol was draft protocol for whatever was in effect. And I almost get the sense that they busted it out in today's stage, not because it was totally necessary, although there was a pretty bad motorcycle crash ahead of the peloton. It felt more like they were doing it to show that they were doing it, to show that they were in control of the race versus doing it because it needed to happen and because it was necessary.
I could certainly believe that, just given what we've seen in the past from the race organization. But it would be nice to get a little clarification on that. I'm sure if I dug hard enough for a PDF somewhere on their website or on the UCI website, just like the PDFs where we often find out the major doping news and they kind of hide them in PDFs on their website. Inner Ring always finds them, I feel like. Anyway, it's been messy so far, been very messy. And part of the messiness has been, I think, a positive in that there have been a lot of breakaways, a lot of breakaway wins. Tinkoff Saxo has been driving the pace on a lot of these stages. They've been setting a pretty high tempo for the run-up to the late climbs. And then, as we've said, they've kind of faded away. But for the rest of those stages, and it's happened 3 or 4 times so far, they've been at the front of the peloton. They have no incentive to chase down the breakaway because they don't really care about Stephen Kruijswijk winning a stage. And no other team is putting in the effort to go up there. No other team is getting to the front and driving the pace. They're content to let Tinkoff Saxo handle things, which I think is often detrimental to their chances at getting stage wins. I think there's a perfect example that happened just recently in stage 9, right in the middle of the day. The breakaway was just 3 minutes ahead of the peloton. There was still, I think there were still 80 kilometers to go. Bardiani, Orica Greenedge, Lampre Merida, they all have some of the best punchy riders here. You got Gerrans, you've got Ulissi, you've got Stefano Perazzi. None of them had a rider in the breakaway. None of them helped Tinkoff Saxo close down that small 3-minute gap, and none of them sent any riders to try to bridge the gap. And then the gap grew out again, and then what you saw was a breakaway winning the stage. And I think if these guys want to take these breakaway wins, they're going to need to play the strategy card a little more effectively, which they're not doing. And I think people are just kind of content to let Tinkoff Saxo drive the pace. On the other hand, it is pretty exciting seeing all these breakaways stay away, and that's been kind of enjoyable to watch. I think my one note on the breakaways is that I would like to call all of the Dutch riders in the race and suggest to them that maybe they don't go trying to break away from the breakaway and ride solo for an hour and a half, which is what Stephen Kruijswijk and Tom Hjelte-Slagter have done so far. And it has not worked out.
I've liked watching different teams, the normal roll of the dice though. I mean, kind of, you have this when the cat's away, the mouse will play going on. Because of this, you know, proxy war that's kind of going on between Astana and Tinkoff Saxo right now, where, you know, not each team is sort of trying to draw the other into doing more work than it needs to, and as a result, neither team has really taken up this chasing the breakdown. You've seen riders who don't generally get a chance to play cards. I mean, both of the hilltop finishes so far, have been won by the breakaway. It was cool to see Bennett and Chousty take a stage instead of being a guy just whittling it down for another rider on his team. It's a unique situation, and it's cool to see. So
yeah, I was a big fan of that Bennett and Chousty win. It reminded me a lot of Rui Costa in the 2013 Tour de France when he was riding in support of Valverde and Quintana in that race. He dropped down on the GC one day to help Valverde try to get back in the peloton. And he's a guy who I think could be in the top 10 of a Grand Tour, just like Bennett and Chousty, but I don't know if he could ever win one. So one day he decides, all right, I'm going to be a breakaway guy now. And he goes out there and he gets it done. He actually did it twice in that race. And I think Bennett and Chousty, same thing. Great ride. A rider who is very capable, actually made something happen rather than just kind of going for like a 10th place on the GC, which he might be able to do in this race. But a breakaway win, probably more exciting.
Yep, definitely.
Speaking of breakaways, there are probably more opportunities for breakaway wins coming up. So let's look at the next 6 stages. Again, that's stages 10 through 15, because there's a rest day after stage 15. We'll look at the profiles and we'll try to give you our predictions on what's going to happen. All right, so now we're going to dig into the next six stages of the race. We're going to look at the profiles generally. Some of them are pretty flat, so I don't think we need to spend too much time on them. And then we'll try to give you our prognostications for who we think will win those stages. Just like last time, important to insert the caveat here that it's pretty hard to predict stages in any circumstances, but it's especially hard trying to predict the outcome of stage 16 a week before that stage happens. But we'll do our best.
I feel like this might be the easiest predicting batch because we have the information from the first week of the race and we don't have to factor in exhaustion or people kind of bailing out until the last week of the race, at least not in large numbers. Because there's the mountain stages don't come till the end of this week, so pretty much outside of crashes, no one's going to leave.
Yeah, but if you say this is the easiest batch, then you're like...
I'm jinxing it.
And you're making... And then if we don't get into them right, we look worse, which...
I think you got enough right last time that I feel like we've got some credit to play with here.
I'm on the roll. This first stage that we're going to talk about here is stage 10, 200 kilometers. There is a Category 4 climb right in the middle of the stage. The last 75 kilometers practically are flat, so pretty hard to see this being anything other than a sprint.
What are you? Come on. At kilometer 130, they're at 3 meters above sea level, and they finish at 31 meters above sea level.
You're right. That's a hard climb
that is
there.
A lot of meters, yeah. And it only takes them 70K to get through it. So, no, definitely a sprint stage, especially after the break success. I think a lot of the Italian sprinting squads were kind of taken by surprise that they haven't had the other teams kind of tow them to the finish, and they may get some marching orders and actually do some work before the final 3K. So I expect to see a higher percentage of sprints this week.
One thing to keep in mind, just I want to mention this, Marco Cannola last year, stage 13, pan flat stage, the breakaway had absolutely no business winning the stage, and he won it anyway. So there's always that possibility, especially in this race where you get so many of these smaller Italian teams putting guys into their breakaway. Nothing is for certain. Nothing is absolutely preordained. There's always the possibility, but this is probably going to be a sprint. And in that scenario, I like Andre Greipel. I think he showed himself to be the fastest man here already. The stage 2 sprint that he did not win, I think he just timed it poorly, and then he went on to take a pretty dominant win after that. So he's who I like for stage 10.
I'm going to go with Elia Viviani. I think the stage he won at Dubai was relatively early in the race. Again, the last stage he won right after that team time trial, not a huge day. I think for no other reason than variety, he's good racing coming off of rest, and so I'll pick him for this one.
I like variety. Variety's good. Stage 11 could be a bit more interesting. There are some bumps, I guess you could say, some climbs on the day. Actually, many, many climbs on the day. There are only three categorized climbs.
One of which is only scored as a categorized GPM once, despite the fact that they go over it four times.
Which is pretty odd.
Very Italian.
This is supposed to be subjective rankings, and I get that, but that's a little much.
Yep.
I don't know what it is about the third time they climb the Tremonti climb that makes it so much harder.
The weird part is that it's supposed to... categorizations will increase, by which I mean decrease, because the numbers decline as the climb gets more intense, towards the end of a stage, because you're more tired. So I could see the last two times being a Category 4, because you're just that much more tired. But to have the penultimate time be
no
the
sense.
Time... Yeah.
It makes no sense.
No, I just don't get it from any standpoint at all. They shouldn't be worried that sprinters are going to get the GPM points, because it's still, it's still 9K from the finish line, like, I don't know why they're doing it like this.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't get it either. The kind of the details on the climb, if you're looking for those, the Tremonti climb, which may or may not be a Category 4, depending on when you're on the Tremonti climb, it's a little more than 4 kilometers at a little more than 4%. It's a bit of an irregular climb. So you go over that four times after going over this up, down, kind of looks like a serrated edge, the whole profile here. I would imagine that this is way too much for the kind of the purer sprinters like an Elia Viviani, especially because he's not going to have the team support because everybody's going to be there for Richie Porte. And then the finish of the stage, it goes downhill pretty much all in the final kilometer. So this looks really, really good for a breakaway, or at least for somebody to kind of make a late jump and try to get away. Because it's hard to see things coming together for a sprint here. I think it's possible, but it's hard to see things coming together for a sprint here. So I'm going to say I like Simon Gerrans to run away with this one. I think he's going to try to get in the breakaway, and he's getting stronger and stronger in this race. And this is a good profile for him, all this up-down. It kind of reminds me of some of the races that we've seen him do well in the past.
Yeah, that's a good pick. That's a really good pick, actually. All right. I think I'm going to go with Diego Ulissi, although he's already won his sprint for this Giro, so I think a lot of the pressure will be off. But he's clearly fit. He's clearly strong. And he is a guy who won a couple of stages the last time he was at the Giro, if I recall.
Ulissi was my other pick, so I'm saving him for a later stage, but I think I have to see that. Like, those two guys are definitely big favorites here. Stage 12, you have 126 kilometers of almost pan flat, and then all of a sudden you get into this bumpy section near the finish where none of the climbs are all that difficult. It's a Cat 4, Cat 3, Cat 4 situation, but I would imagine that they're going to see attacks fly. They're going to be the kind of climbs that are going to break up the peloton, if it's even there. I mean, the breakaway is going to have a nice chance here. I think they're going to have a great chance to stay away. And then the stage does finish on this Cat 4 summit. I don't want to call it a summit because it's not really a summit, but it's a Cat 4. It's the top of a climb, and it's a 7.1% gradient going up. So you would imagine that that's going to be won by some explosive, punchy type of guy. And for me, that is Diego Ulissi. So I guess I don't want to be too boring here and hit you over the head with a guy who's already won a stage. But Diego Ulissi, I think, is going to really like this day. And he's also going to be able to get into the breakaways in this race as well. And that makes him extra dangerous.
I am going to beat you over the head with this one, because I'm going to pick somebody who already won a stage and who's already led the race. I think I'm going to go with Michael Matthews. He hung in super hard on some of the climbier days. I mean, obviously still lost time, but has been looking real good. He won at the top of a Category 2 climb, obviously somewhat unusual circumstances last year. I don't think, especially the way he rode in some of the longer, harder spring classics this year, that this is going to be that big an obstacle for him. I just think coming into the finish, there's going to be no one that has the legs he's going to have coming up this last pitch.
Stage 13 that follows that, maybe the most boring stage, not just in this like race, but this could be the most boring World Tour stage of the year.
This is impressively boring. I mean, not only is it's actually downhill.
It's down. There's no up. They lose 53 meters. They end 2 meters above sea level. Fortunately, it's only 147 kilometers. So that's
Say fortunately. I see that as an even more boring thing here, because, you know, if they raced it would be a 90-minute stage.
Fair.
Not quite that fast, but I mean, it really, to me, has Piano Day written all over it, which is the typical. It used to be very, very common in the Giro, I guess less common now, where everybody just rides slowly for the first 90 to 100K and then picks up the pace, and then there's a furious sprint at the end. But I mean, Bob Roll, who raced the Giro back in the 80s, used to say that no one rides slow like Italians when the sun comes out. So if it's good weather this day, I expect a very casual ride, especially with the next couple of stages, which we'll talk about in a minute.
And it's right along the beach, too. So
I think a beach break would be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
If the breakaway is too close, if they get to like 97K to go and the breakaway only has a minute, they're definitely going to stop and jump in the water.
Roll back onto the course with fat tires and, cruiser bikes. That'd be...
They'd have to get the proportions right for the UCI rules.
Fair.
Yes. I think
there are no rules.
Cipollini could just come into the peloton and ride a couple... this is a good day for Cipollini to show up and ride in the peloton, which has happened before. He just got on the side of the road, got out of his car on the side of the road, got in a bike, and rode along with the bunch.
Nobody would say anything. People would be too happy about it, I think.
No, it's exactly what happened the last time. Is people are like, all right, Cipollini, photo op.
I will point out, however, that the finale of this stage is a bit technical. There is a roundabout just before the 1 kilometer to go, and not a sharp right-hander, but there is a right-hand turn around 500 meters to go. So in this sprint, we could see things get a bit messy. The final 500 meters are straight out, and it's a nice little straightaway into the finish. But getting there into the position could be interesting, and it's the kind of the kind of final 2 kilometers in which having a nice lead out will be helpful, because you're going to want to have somebody to bring you into that final corner into a good spot. So anyway, probably almost certainly a sprinter's day. I like the combination of a roundabout in the finish and then a long straightaway. It makes me, I'm going to go with Nizzolo. This is my day of picking Giacomo Nizzolo. I think he's got a good team to lead him into this final corner and then help him be at a high speed for that long, the 500 meters of flat straightaway to get into the finish.
See, I was thinking more Greipel, just because of the lead out situation. He's looked like he's had the most organized lead out. Like I said earlier, though, not something that can really put the rest of the field in a line, or at least that hasn't been demonstrated yet. And Greipel does tend to like harder days and shorter sprints versus all this, you know, flatness, roundabout, and 500 meters. But I, you know, you said it yourself, he's the fastest guy in the race, so I like him.
After what we see as being a very boring stage 13 comes what may end up being the most decisive stage in the race. The absurdly long, nearly 60 kilometers, it's 59.4 kilometers, individual time trial from Treviso to Valdo Biadene. And these guys are going to be on the bike for a long time, and there's not going to be anyone to ride behind. I mean, assuming you're following the rules, this is a long time trial, and it's gonna really put guys into the red. And a GC that I would imagine, once we get to this stage, it's still going to be pretty close among that top three, plus Rigoberto Urán a little bit off the back. I think it's going to be totally changed up after stage 14, because this is too long, and it's a bit of a hilly one and towards the end. Not very hilly, but there are a couple hills.
Sustained rollers.
There are sustained rollers, and it's going to break up the GC. There's no two ways about it. It's too long for there not to be some gaps in the general classification after stage 14.
No, I mean, I think if the winner of this stage really pops one, you could see guys getting time cut just because it's so long. And, you know, if you're not good at time trialing, there's not much you can do here. You know, there's no autobus. So you're kind of, out on your own and nowhere to go for help.
Yeah, I think if you're a sprinter, this is not going to be a pleasant. Well, the next 7 days are going to be pretty unpleasant for the sprinters. But I like Richie Porte on this stage. I think it suits him really well. I think the flatter the time trial, the happier he is compared to the rest of his GC rivals, just because, I mean, obviously he's great on a hilly time trial. If it were Richie Porte versus Tony Martin, then I think obviously Porte would prefer the hillier time trial. But since he's such a good time trialist, he's going to love this 25, actually it's almost 30 kilometers of flat to start off the time trial. That's going to suit him well, because he is a great time trial specialist. And there is no Tony Martin. There's no Tom Dumoulin in the race. So I think it's going to be the GC guys mostly battling for the time trial victory here.
I'm going to go with Rigoberto Urán. As unimpressive as he's looked so far, he hasn't looked shattered. He hasn't looked destroyed. He's really, you know, you're having a bad day and you could really dig and get 5 seconds, or you could kind of sit back, lose those 5 seconds, but save some energy. Like you said, he's been suffering with bronchitis, hasn't had amazing team support. This is a great day to save yourself for if things aren't going right, because differences can and will be made. Plus, it's a little hilly. I think he'll like that. You know, there is a categorized climb in it, but it's one of those things where you do a Strava ride and you plug it, you put your data in the computer and you're like, oh, there was a climb there. Like, seriously, from 30K to about 35K, you gain, you know, maybe 500 feet, which is not climbing as I understand it by any means, but certainly will give guys who aren't just, and like you said, there aren't many time trial specialists here, it'll give people who can climb a certain amount of advantage over those people who just like to put their head down and go.
Yeah, and Urán, remember last year, he won the Giro time trial by more than a minute. And it was, I don't want to say it was out of nowhere, but it was unexpected. So he's definitely got what it takes. He knows how to win a Giro time trial and do it in style. So I'll definitely be looking forward to that battle. I'm a fan of Urán, and I like the fact that he's up there still, even if he hasn't been great so far, because I like to see the 4-way battle instead of a 3-way battle. They can be more fun. Speaking of battles, the next day is probably the most difficult stage that we will have seen so far. Stage 15, it is the battle on the Madonna di Campiglio, which is a really, really hard climb. The stage, not all that long, 165 kilometers, but there are three categorized climbs, and it's pretty much a really long Category 2 climb to start things off, and then a bit of a respite, and then this 1-2 punch of Cat 1 climbs that will be really unpleasant for everybody involved. Both of them are just steep and pretty steady, and it's just going to be a long, painful ride to the top. And given what we've seen so far, I think Fabio Aru is the guy to watch here, especially coming after stage 14, where I see him losing a fair bit of time to Port, Uran, and Contador in that long time trial. So we've already seen Aru being probably the most aggressive guy in the race. Now he's going to have even more incentive because he's probably going to be a bit behind his rivals, and he's going to pretty much have to go. So this is a good opportunity for him, I think, to try to claw back some time after what I imagine will be a rough outing in that time trial.
I definitely think it's going to be a moment of truth for Aru, at least 14, at stages 14 and 15, because we really haven't seen him throw down in a big boy time trial. Not that it needs to be gendered like that, but it is an all-male race. And 15, he's going to have to make up time, and I don't see him doing it. I see a lot of kind of caginess between Astana and Tinkoff Saxo at this race so far. And I think a lot of it from Contador is he's kind of been rope-a-doping it a bit. Like, you know, he's been playing up the shoulder. Today he had the ice pack on the face, and he's almost seemed to put himself in situations where he's isolated against Astana riders to make them go on the attack, to make them burn matches. And he hasn't really seemed drained. You know, he lost a second or two today, but, you know, that's almost, you know, let him have it. You know, if he takes the lead in the Giro, it's up to Astana to do all the work to chase stuff down. You know, I don't want to give up the race lead, but I might. And I just remember watching him at the Vuelta last year kind of really pick apart Chris Froome. Like, just has this ability to ride really well with somebody, let them do a ton of work, let them think they're pushing you around, and then throw down that one hard attack and, you know, ride away. I don't think it's going to be a huge gap, but I see Contador taking this because I really think he's going to be the winner. I think he's the strongest guy in the race, and he's going to show it here.
In any case, I think we're bound to see some kind of battle there. Speaking of the GC battle, now that we have gone over the next couple stages, we are already 9 stages into the race. I think now we can take the chance to update our GC predictions.
No, not doing it.
So you're gonna keep with what you had before. That's your final decision.
I think so. There's really nothing other than potentially the strength of Astana and the underperformance so far of Uran. There haven't been any huge surprises. Like I said, it's been a little cagey. So I'm sticking with Contador for the overall for sure. You know, we'll see when we get to the mountains, but, you know, I'm comfortable with that.
I think you had Iran coming in second and Port third. Are you still comfortable with that prognostication?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, Iran, a guy who rides himself into races, and Richie Port, a guy who always seems to find a bad day.
Ride himself out of races.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, he doesn't really ride himself out. He just doesn't have a good day one day. And, you know, he doesn't do anything dumb. He doesn't overextend himself, at least not that I can see. Plus, he's got his RV. So
he does have that super spiffy RV, which could just totally change the game.
Yeah, that's maybe I should switch because of the RV.
All right, I'm sticking with Contador as well, despite his dislocated shoulder. And I did have Iran in my top three, and I've seen enough from Aru that I'm going to put Aru now in the top three. I think Contador, Port, and Aru are the three big favorites. For me, for most people, I would guess, and in that order too. So we will find out more when we get to this difficult long time trial on stage 14 and a stage 15 that closes out with a really, really long climb, the Madonna di Campiglio, which, you know, the climb itself, I guess, is not the hardest climb ever, but it does come right after it. Category 1. And then I guess that kind of 1-2 uphill punch, they're going to be going up for a long time. All right, so we are going to also do a third show again on the second rest day, one final Giro d'Italia show to kind of sum up where we've been so far and try to make some final predictions about where we think the explosive final week's going to go. But so far, I mean, any kind of closing thoughts?
I mean, I don't want to dwell on it since there's plenty of it on the internet, but it's not the greatest thing in the world to see a team that was maybe not going to exist, or at least not have a pro-level license, be smacking the crap out of everyone on a incredibly hard-paced first week and a half of a Grand Tour, especially because they haven't looked particularly good for the rest of the season. They had some moments at Liège, but that was a totally different set of guys, a totally different kind of race. So it certainly doesn't make people who had doubts about Astana not have doubts about Astana now.
There was a little bit of this as well. There was a stage early on where Roman Kreuziger was in a break, and he was by far the best GC rider in the break. And for a little while there, it looked like the peloton was going to let them ride away, and for Roman Kreuziger to suddenly pick up a huge chunk of time, and there was this like slim possibility, but it was a real possibility for a few minutes that Roman Kreuziger was going to jump into the GC lead. And for me, it was the exact same situation. This is not exactly, I would think, something that the UCI would want from a PR standpoint. Roman Kreuziger having a pending doping trial appeal, I guess. So, yeah, there's been a little bit of this where I would imagine that the people organizing the sport are not a huge fan necessarily of the way things have gone so far. One maybe more positive note that I came away from the first week with is I really like seeing some of these guys who are still on GC. We've only had two or three tough climbing days so far, very unexpectedly still there. And I'm curious to see if, case in point, I'm curious to see if Andre Amador is going to hold on to his spot in the general classification, because right now he's sitting 10th overall. He's 2 minutes and 24 seconds back on Alberto Contador. He's looked very strong so far. Giovanni Visconti, his teammate, also up there in the top 10. But Amador is from Costa Rica, and I'm not sure that I've really ever seen a Costa Rican rider riding at the level that he's riding at right now. And it's not going to be easy to hold on to a GC top 10, but they didn't really have anything to lose. And Movistar is here with this kind of devil-may-care attitude, and I would love to see him stick up there along with, you know, Davide Formolo still up there on the general classification. He's just a kid. When he won that stage, somebody made the comment on Twitter, I think, about, he looked like he didn't even really belong in the race, like he was too young to race. I love that he's up there right now. And there's a couple of guys, there's a very small group because the race is already kind of shaking out, but there's a couple of guys up there that are very unexpectedly still hanging on. Darwin Adepuma tragically lost his mother just before this race. He's currently 12th overall as of the end of stage 9. Another guy, I can't not root for him. So there's a couple guys who are kind of on the fringes of the GC, not really challenging for the overall, but who I would really like to see stay up there, stay in the conversation. And I'm kind of hoping, and I will say I'm rooting for some of these guys to stick up there and keep things interesting into the final 2 weeks. So we will be back on the next rest day. We're going to do our next show, and we're going to talk about where the race stands at that point. We will see you then. So that about does it for...
I don't want to see you, but you will hear us.
I guess we've been over this before, but you know, I guess I never really remember that fact. But you will hear us again soon. And for now, I guess that about does it for Giro d'Italia show number 2 of the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.